It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
That seems to me like government is establishing a religion.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
If you give people rights, women's rights, gay rights, whatever, there can't be equal rights if there's special rights.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Surveys show that people still really prefer freedom versus force.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation. Welcome to the show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Love hearing from you. Be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter and go over to Facebook and give us a like. We've got a great show planned for you today. We'll be talking with Chris Cantwell in this first segment. He's one of my great partners with Trans World Business Advisors. And then we'll be talking with a school resource officer who is works in one of the schools here in the metro area in the second segment. We want to talk with him about the fact that Denver Public Schools and Boulder Valley Schools are kicking their school resource officers off of campus. And so we're going to talk about that. And then in studio with me is my good friend, partner of the show, Susan Harris. Susan, it's great to have you here.
Thanks, Kim. Good morning.
Good morning. We'll be talking about conservatism.
Sounds interesting.
It should be interesting. You know, Susan, the word conserve, you know, conserving energy, conserving, you know, our public lands, conserve has a very positive connotation. But for some reason, the word conservative in the political realm has really gotten kicked around quite a bit.
Yes, it really has. You know, I think it's just part of the polarization of people's viewpoints and the divisiveness that, quite frankly, I don't know if it's the media, but when I say the word media, I mean that is an all-inclusive concept, including social media. You know, I've really thought about this for a long time, and the only thing that I can think of that has been more divisive, at least for the United States, and I'm not sure about around the world, but at least for the United States, is the influx of social media on our culture. And because of social media, everyone seems to feel the need to put their opinions out and how they feel about things, what their opinions are about political, not just political things, but almost every issue that comes up. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, you open yourself up to disagreements, other people's opinions. And instead of listening, we all go on the defense.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think the way these algorithms are pulling us in to these arguments and this opinion, you know, even the idea that giving your opinion is a good idea on a regular basis, I really think it is the root cause of a lot of the divisiveness that we feel. Because when you speak with a person one-on-one as an individual in person,
mm-hmm.
you find that you agree on many, many things. You might not agree on how to get there, but you agree on where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
It's just in this impersonal electronic world where we're not really human,
mm-hmm.
that the divisiveness, the seeds are planted, and then they grow from there.
Well, and this divisiveness is so, I'm so concerned about it. So let's delve into that in the third and fourth segment.
And quite frankly, I think the word conservative has been used to divide us instead of to unite us. Because if you really think about what conservatism is, it's just kind of a mode of thinking. It's one ideological way of thinking. It's one way to live your life. And it's not an ideological way of thinking that says everyone needs to think the same way I do.
True. And I think that there has been kind of that narrative that's defined it like that.
Right.
And so we're going to challenge that in the third and fourth segment. But I also want to say thank you to you, Susan Harris, because the Harris family is, as I mentioned, one of our partners. But you have sponsored what we've done with Ben Martin, you know, and he is a patriotic right. historian and former Army Ranger. So we did the Federalist Papers last year, and now we're going through the important speeches and documents of the founding. And it's rich stuff. So thank you so much.
Oh, you're so welcome. It's our pleasure.
And so we will be talking with Ben Martin, right before the 4th of July, we will be doing the Declaration of Independence. So that should be really, really great.
Perfect timing.
So let's go ahead and jump in here, though. We've got a great show planned for you today. We look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Remember, it is never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, their freedom, or their livelihood via force, whether it's with a weapon, a policy, unpredictable and excessive taxation or fear. If something is a good idea, then you shouldn't have to force people to implement it. And I want to say thank you to the team, to producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie for all your good work. And to each of you listeners, you're each treasured, you're valued, you have a purpose. So go out and go after that today. Our inspiration for today, since we'll be talking about conservatism, Russell Amos Kirk was an American political theorist, moralist, historian, social critic, and literary critic known for his influence on the 20th century American conservatism. His 1953 book, The Conservative Mind, gave shape to the post-war conservative movement in the U.S. It traced the development of conservative thought in the Anglo-American tradition, giving special importance to the ideas of Edmund Burke. Kirk was considered the chief proponent of traditionalist conservatism. He was also an accomplished author of Gothic and ghost story fiction. He was born in 1918. He died in 1994. So, Susan and Steve, what do you think of this? I'll go to you first, Susan, and then you, Steve. Russell Kirk said this: men cannot improve a society by setting fire to it. They must seek out its old virtues and bring them back into light. What do you think of that, Susan?
Well, it's about respecting the past and not just ignoring the past. You know, it's easy to break things down and criticize things from the past, but without looking at the big picture and the impact that the past has had on our present, a lot of times things that seem negative, things that caused suffering in the past, really resulted in monumental change and monumental shifts in society for the better. So, you know, always looking at the past and trying to, you know, rewrite histories to say that something horrible that happened didn't eventually result in improvements in the world is not a good way to look at the world. I think looking at the past mistakes, seeing where they brought us, and move forward trying to not repeat those mistakes again is so important.
True that. Steve, what's your thoughts on that?
Oh, what's the Army colonel? I mean, not to put one quote up against another. What's the, is it West, Colonel West?
Uh-huh.
The retired Army colonel. I think he's recently been quoted as saying, history is not here for you to like or dislike. It's here for you to learn from. And again, setting fire to things and stamping out our history is just, I can't think of a bigger mistake we could possibly make as a culture.
I know. It's just astounding, and it's happening at breakneck speed. But let's jump over here to a guy that is super positive all the time, Chris Cantwell, because he's in the business of helping people buy and sell opportunity. He's with Transworld Business Advisors. Chris Cantwell, what's going on in your world right now?
Good morning, Kim. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How about you?
I am good. Well, you know, I always like to think about conservatism, an element of conservatism is capitalism, and capitalism could be owning your own business. How about that?
I love it.
Well, good. So let me tell you what's going on. Last week, we had the largest increase in business for sale inquiries. Not quite back to where we were pre-shutdown, but it's probably as close as it's been in terms of again, people inquiring on the businesses that we have listed. We've got about 200 businesses listed right now in the Denver metro, or really throughout the state. Most of them are in the Denver metro area. But if you have been thinking about selling, and maybe you've paused to kind of wait and ride this out, or if you have a distressed business now and maybe you need to get out of a lease, or if you're curious about what your business might be worth in the market today, now is the time to connect with me. I think we could see a flood of businesses coming to market, and this would be a good time to jump in ahead of the rush. I do not charge for any consulting or any advice. So if people want to reach out to me and learn a little bit more about potentially selling a business they own, or of course, have questions about buying a business, they are more than welcome to call me at 844-SELL-BIZ, B-I-Z, 844-SELL-BIZ, or they can see any of my info on your website, Kim, kimmonson.com.
Fantastic. And, you know, I think that there is a tremendous opportunity right now, because last week you mentioned that the Small Business Administration has done some things that really help people buy businesses. So when I talked to Jason McBride with Presidential Wealth Management, Lauren Levy over at Polygon Financial Group, Karen Levine in the RE/MAX Alliance, there's opportunities right now. And, you know, so instead of just sitting and waiting, go ahead and when opportunity knocks, you need to answer the door, Chris Cantwell.
Absolutely. And crazy times like this lead to a bunch of opportunities. So the opportunities out there. Don't sit back and wait on the sidelines anymore. Let's get in the game. Let's go play.
So Chris's phone number is 844-SELL-BIZ, B-I-Z. That's 844-SELL-BIZ. Chris, great to talk with you. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Sounds good. Have a great morning.
Thanks so much. And before we go to break, a couple of things. As we've mentioned, we are doing our first salon series. This is with Helen Raleigh and Dr. Paul Prentice. As you know, Helen immigrated from China. She was on the show yesterday. She writes for The Federalist, among a whole bunch of other things. She has a couple of books out as well. But Three Punches to Knock Down Democratic Socialism, we'll have it next Monday evening over at Water's Edge Winery. And we have just 15 tickets left. And so go to my website, that's kimmunson.com, to go ahead and purchase your tickets. And it is going to be a very important evening, because we need to be able to talk with our friends and our family and our colleagues about this battle of ideas that's going on, and be able to knock down this romance with socialism right now. So be sure and go to my website and sign up. It's going to sell out, and so don't delay on that. And then also my friends Reggie Carr and Johnny Thomas have been in the black entertainment business for many years, and they are really all in to try to help Donald Trump get reelected. And they have a bus that they're going to take, a bus tour into ethnic neighborhoods to move the needle to voting for Donald Trump. And they have funded all the stuff that they're doing with I'm a Trumpster, 98% with their own money. But we would like to help them get this bus wrapped with like you see on the light rail cars, you know, how they have different advertisements. Well, they're going to wrap this bus with I'm a Trumpster, and they need $10,000 to do that. And so we are working to raise that money, and then we're going to have a kickoff party, we think on the 26th. And so go to, first of all, I'm a Trumpster. So it's imatrumpster.com and contribute. And for every $50, you'll also get one of these really cool battle masks that they have. And then email me over at kim@kimmunson.com and let me know that you did that, so that we're sure we have you on the guest list. And so before we go to break, Hooters Restaurants is a great partner of mine as well. And they have a happy hour at Hooters every Monday through Friday, 3 to 6 p.m. And they have half off some of their selected appetizers and some specials on some of the drinks. Wednesday is Wings Day, and that's all the wings you can eat for $15.99. And then they have lunch specials all the time. Kids eat free. So be sure and check out Hooters.com. You can dine in, you can order and have curbside pickup, and just treat yourself. So we're going to go to break. We'll be right back.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. It's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Go over to Facebook and give us a like, and be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter. That's all at the website as well. And then our three punches to knock down democratic socialism, you can purchase your tickets at kimmunson.com. Very excited to have on the line with me a school resource officer here in the metro area. With all of this stuff that's happening in America, we've seen that the Denver Public Schools and Boulder Valley Schools are kicking their school resource officers off campus. And I doesn't seem like a good idea to me, Susan. What do you think?
You know, quite frankly, I don't have enough information to know if it's a good idea or not. You know, my common sense would say no, it's not a great idea. It seems like having these resource officers at the school, it's an opportunity for that type of authority figure to start to develop positive relationships with the community and with young people so that they understand how to interact with those types of authorities, what the benefits of those authorities having them around is, and how they really influence our community in a positive way. And to pull them out of the schools, to me, just sends the opposite message.
Seems like that to me as well. So, school resource officer, what's your thoughts on this?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I think you're absolutely right. You know, the entire point is the relationships with staff and students. This is not something that's new in Colorado. We've had school resource officers in schools for over 20 years. We have state statute that defines what a school resource officer is. It's not just throwing cops in a building and hoping it works. We even have legislation that Claire Davis on that came out after the Rappel High School tragedy that basically speaks to a school's liability or basically limits their immunity if they don't exercise reasonable care to protect school students and staff. So I feel like this move is really just a giant step backwards.
Do school resource officers, do you think it makes the schools safer, you know, in light of, you know, these tragic school shootings that we've had? Do you think it helps keep our schools safer?
Absolutely. The number one piece in anything we can do, I mean, we rely so much on technology and cameras and everything else, but the bottom line is that a living person, a well-trained officer in that building is the number one safety piece, regardless of anything else we do. So to take out that first line defense really just doesn't make sense.
So do you know what, with the Boulder Valley Schools and with Denver Public Schools taking the school resources officers, you know, kicking them out basically, what are they doing to, you know, to assure safety of students in those schools? Have you heard of anything, officer?
You know what I've heard, and I know this is kind of a nationwide movement. Colorado's not the only state to approach this. Usually the answer to that is private security. We're going to get someone private security. There'll still be an armed security personnel in the building. But that lacks so much training, authority. And then in the end, school resource officer, you're trying to replace a resource with a security guard, somebody who doesn't have those relationships, doesn't have that training, doesn't have even that legal authority in some ways to do other things. The school resource job is more than just wearing a badge and a gun in the building. You have the mental health component, which is so huge. So I think their answer is going to be privatized security, but that's really not interchangeable.
Susan, did you have a question?
Well, I have a couple of thoughts. One is, you know, I hear often that certain individuals, especially in the African American community, they seem to emphasize that they have to sit there, like, for example, sit their sons down and have a talk with them about how they should respond should a police officer approach them in a given situation, you know, especially in a car, to, you know, have your hands on 2 and 10, or, you know, to keep not to do anything, no quick movements, that type of thing. What I find interesting about that is my parents never had that conversation with me, but somehow I knew how to behave when police officers would approach me. I knew I needed to do exactly what they told me to do when they told me to do it, and I needed to be on my best behavior in those situations. I just knew it. No one had to explain it to me. And I think it's doing a disservice to the African American community to think that they actually have to sit down their kids and explain that to them. And I can understand why they would want to explain it to them, just to make sure they know. Of course, we all want to make sure our kids know how to behave. But I just don't think it's something that African American parents do that other people do not also do. I mean, I don't remember my parents exactly having that type of a conversation. Maybe they did, but I knew how to behave around authority figures, and I knew to respect them and to understand that I needed to do what they told me to do for my own safety. And so I feel like having those resource officers in the school, that's where you can start to learn that behavior and start to practice that behavior. And it gives you as an individual a real sense of security to have that officer there. And so psychologically, you can relax as a student and focus on learning and not be as afraid.
Officer, your thoughts on that?
I 100% agree. I don't remember growing up having that same conversation either, where I think you understood that was the time to behave yourself, like you said, and just and face the situation. And if there's complaints or disagreement, there's a later date for that. It's not in the moment. And I think now more than ever, with the speed of technology, social media, these kids are seeing these videos instantly from across the country. And I know in our school, you could have students say, well, that's not my cop. That's not my SRO. These situations, I know that my SRO is approachable, and this is how. And I think you're right. You set that environment in a middle school and high school environment where they can interact with an officer and not feel the need to hold their hands up at 10 and 2 for their own personal safety. They can say, hey, not all cops are that way. But pulling them out of the schools, what's their example? What's their interaction with a cop until they're 18, 20 years old out in the street? And now that may be their first interaction with law enforcement.
Well, officer, it seems that there's a movement to, you know, what happened with George Floyd up in Minneapolis, you know, it's very, very tragic. And, you know, every profession has a few bad apples. I mean, that happens. But it seems that if, in fact, these school resource officers are pulled out of the schools, then these kids, as Susan mentioned, don't have the opportunity of making that relationship. So in the big narrative then out there, instead of, as Susan said, or you said, that, oh, that's not the police officer that I know, that then if they don't have that interaction, then the media will be able to vilify all police officers. And so I'm concerned about that as well. So what's your thoughts on that, officer?
I completely agree. I think we're taking this from a two-sided conversation to a one-sided, and now the media can fill in the definition of what all cops are. Now they don't have a balanced view. Whereas, like I said, in schools where you have officers, we don't just sit in an office waiting to write tickets to kids. We get invited into classrooms when classes are learning about Fourth and Fifth Amendment issues. They bring us in just to speak about what this means for kids so they can see different things. When there's social unrest like right now, I mean, obviously with COVID, maybe not so much, but prior to COVID, we would be brought into social studies classrooms and just say, hey, officer, what's your perspective? And now pulling them out of the schools, you lose all of that. Now the media really does get to write the narrative to these kids about what it is to be a law enforcement officer.
So my concern then is, and I think you've just nailed it, is that the media now can rewrite the narrative on this. And ultimately, though, I think that it could make our kids less safe. Susan, did you have a comment?
They might not actually be less safe literally, but I think they might feel less safe,
okay,
which to me is almost worse. In some ways, because if you have that sense of security walking around your school grounds that you are safe because you have this authority on your campus that can take care of any kind of a crisis or come to your rescue should you need it, there's just a real sense of security in that as a child. These are children we're talking about. They're not adults. And you go into your classroom with that sense of security and you focus on learning. Instead of focusing on who's around me, how am I going to protect myself if there's a situation where I am threatened? Mm-hmm. You know, you just have that overall sense of well-being when you feel safe. And you cannot learn if you don't feel safe. And I think that that is very important.
Well, yeah, and true that even in your communities, you can't create your businesses and go about your life right if you don't feel safe. So, Officer, thank you for being with us. What would be the final thought that you'd like to leave with our listeners this morning?
That's a challenge. That's a good question. Like we said, the school resource officer, just by the definition, the term is the resource. Years ago, they had actually referred to SROs as community resource officers with the same idea. You have a place to go to. At my school, I have times where members of the community who have no affiliation with the school just know there's a cop car out front. If I have a question, I can go to the school and I have a person I know I can speak to. In removing this, it's not just the schools. You're removing that resource from the community as well. Like you said, that visible presence, that safety, you're removing that resource and just further distancing law enforcement from the communities in which they serve. So just something to think about. It's bigger than just the kids in the school. It's the communities of a larger scale.
Okay, well, Officer, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
You bet. Thank you.
Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, what is on your mind this morning?
Well, boy, Kim, we had quite a day yesterday with the markets. We opened up with the Dow down about 800 points in the first few minutes, and the markets actually managed to fight their way back through the entire day. We ended up in positive territory across the board with, I think the Dow was up about 150, NASDAQ was up. So we definitely still have some resilience out there in the market, whether people think we do or not. And this morning, Kim, we're seeing the futures up about 650 points. Let's hope we don't get a reverse repeat of yesterday where we start really strong and then give it all back and get weak. But we're looking to start off strong this morning. Yesterday was a very impressive comeback. So COVID, elections, riots, doesn't matter. This market still seems to have some decent resilience right now.
So question, Jason, on the NASDAQ, you said the other day before, you know, we'd had this roller coaster stuff that it was at a all-time high. Where, and I always look at NASDAQ as kind of the, you know, the bread and butter, you know, the new little companies. Is that right? Is that what that is?
Yeah, NASDAQ tends to have more growth stocks, more tech stocks. You know, it's viewed as having more innovative companies and newer growth companies. So, Kim, NASDAQ the other day got up to 10,086, which was a new all-time high. 10,000 is a pretty important mark, too. Yesterday, it closed at 97.56. So, you know, it's maybe 2-3% off the all-time high.
Okay. So there is opportunity, and, you know, we talk about it all the time. And as I said with Chris Cantwell, when opportunity knocks, it's good to answer the door. And so one of the things to do is to sit down with you and your colleagues at Presidential Wealth Management to, you know, make sure that you have your individual plan, your risk tolerance, the asset allocation you want, you know, to try to get to your goals. And so I would highly recommend that people do that, Jason.
Yeah, absolutely. If you don't have a plan, it makes it a lot harder to stick to it when things get rough. So if you do a good plan, you understand why you're putting the pieces together you are. Hopefully you've got a good handle on your risk tolerance. A lot of times when things get hairy, people find out it's less than what they thought. But you know what, Kim? That's okay. You can make an adjustment to something that feels better for you, where you can sleep at night and hopefully still accomplish your goals as well.
So how people can reach you is 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600, or we have this very cool landing page together at airpresidential.com. That's A-I-R, presidential.com. So Jason, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Sounds great, Kim.
Okay, we're going to go to break and come back with my friend Susan Harris. The Harris family is the sponsors of our great Federalist Papers show that we did last year. And then this year, rich stuff. And that is the America's founding documents, or the important documents of America's founding, and the speeches as well. So we're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking about conservatism with Susan Harris. Stay tuned.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lauren Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, Kim Munson, MONSON.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. It's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter. You can buy your tickets for the three punches to knock down democratic socialism. Two more tickets just sold, so we're going to sell out. I would highly recommend that you do that. The event is next Monday night at Water's Edge Winery. In studio with me is Susan Harris. And the Harris family has sponsored our Federalist Papers show last year. And then this year, it's the important documents and speeches of America's founding. And Ben Martin is a patriotic historian. He is a former Army Ranger. He has such a love for our American idea. And with what's going on out there, Susan, these shows are really, really important.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, we're just not as familiar with American history as we used to be. Mm-hmm. Certainly our young people are not as familiar with American history. And so it's really enlightening. And I always learn something myself that I didn't know, because there's so much richness in all these documents and there's so much to know. It's almost impossible to really understand it all the time. So
it's a life's work. It's really been,
it really is.
It's Ben's life's work. And so it's great that we get to, you know, learn from him. But
right.
Before we jump into our subject, which I think really relates to all this, you had a comment about we had the school resource officer on in the second segment. You
right.
had a thought about that, Susan.
You know, it's just interesting to me. It just seems like more and more our politicians are making decisions and policy based on what I would call a knee-jerk reaction. So something happens, the media promotes it, and then the politicians make policy. And instead of sitting down and slowly looking at a situation, looking at all aspects of a situation, really determining, or at least trying to, because it's very difficult to determine all the consequences of policy, but trying to determine the long-term effects of a policy, the short-term effects, instead of doing that, there are just these instantaneous knee-jerk reactions, which is a very immature way of governing, but even just running your own personal life. It's really not wise, in my opinion.
So, Susan, it seems to me that, you know, in our education system, you just mentioned that a lot of our younger people are not learning our history. And so if you don't understand the history, Ben always says, in order to love something, you must know it first. So in order for us to love the American idea, we need to know it first. And the narrative now is really, you know, like when we were talking with this officer, is that then somebody owns the narrative if you're not having a discussion about it. So they can say, oh, George Washington had slaves, but it's not within the context of what was happening at that time in the world.
Right.
Slavery was prevalent throughout the world at that time. And these guys, they're human beings, they were imperfect, but they deliberated this idea that was embodied in the Declaration that all men are created equal, and they have these rights from God of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness.
Well, that was planting the seed to end slavery.
Mm-hmm.
I really think the Founding Fathers, some of them anyway, maybe not all of them, because of the times that they were embodied, I really think they wanted to end slavery, that was already on their minds, but it wasn't the right time to do it. They couldn't accomplish all of their goals. They had to pick certain goals that they wanted to accomplish. So the first was to establish the nation, and that became their first priority. And even if they had these other goals of one being ending slavery, they first had to establish the nation. So they established the nation, but they left that all men are created equal. They left that seed in the Declaration so that they could go back and fertilize that seed and grow that seed. And that's what happened.
And within a short period of time, within what, 70 plus years, America went to war to keep the Union together and to also answer this question on whether or not there would be slavery in the United States. Nobody else did that out there.
Right.
You know, nobody else did that. And so I can't understand why it is that America gets vilified when America was the only country that really stepped up to the plate. Now, Wilberforce, you know, over in England 20 years earlier, he worked to get rid of the British slave trade. But no other country did this,
right,
Susan?
Well, and to this day, there is still slavery. We just don't talk about it. It's we're not allowed to talk about it because it's not America, and it's not a part of that narrative. There is still slavery being practiced in many parts of the world. And instead of solving those problems, we go back and berate ourselves on our ancient history. Well, not ancient. It's probably been over, what, maybe only 100 years. And I think that's part of the problem. It could be it has only been 100 years. So, quite frankly, 100 years is a blink of an eye.
You mean since they've been berating the American idea? Or?
Since slavery ended. I'm sorry. My math may not be right.
So it was like 1865. So what, about 150
years?
Okay,
150 years.
Yeah.
So maybe three generations, not quite, mm-hmm. At this point. And that may not be enough to have healed a lot of wounds. I understand that. I really do. It may take five generations for those wounds to really heal over to the extent where they're not impacting certain people on a daily basis. I'm not sure. But I do think that's part of the problem. It hasn't been long enough for those
hurts,
wounds to heal and to really permeate through the entire society so that not only is the scar tissue not there anymore, but the effects of those, you know, unfortunate events are no longer impacting our society.
So, Susan, on this, Pastor Christine Coleman reached out to me, and we did a podcast, which is on the website and was in the newsletter last week. She survived the Rwandan genocide. And one of the things that she said is, for us to unite is we need to be able to forgive.
Yes.
And so when there are those wounds, we need to not focus on the wounds as much as forgiveness and moving forward to unite. But I submit to you that this narrative out there is really trying to divide us. You know, and as Lincoln said, it's also biblical, a house divided cannot stand. And so the consequences, if we continue down this road, is, I think, not good for America.
I agree. It's almost like, and when I say the word media, I don't necessarily mean the news media. I mean social media. There's so much media that is that comes at us all the time. I really think they're pouring salt in the wounds, to be honest, instead of trying to heal the wounds and bring us together. I really think more than 80% because I want to be conservative. So I'll say 80%, but it's probably more than that. 80% of the people in this country just want to live their life and be a good person and be the best person that they can be. And quite frankly, I feel like that's what conservatism is trying to be the best person you can be and be a good person and follow the golden rule. And oh, by the way, to follow the golden rule, you have to respect yourself and take care of yourself and be responsible for yourself. But I really do feel like right now salt is being poured in the wounds instead of uniting ourselves, understanding that most of us want to be continue to be free, continue to live in this country as free people, be able to speak our minds, and work together to solve problems rationally.
And I think that that is rooted in conservatism. And the word conservative means in the political realm to conserve, preserve these ideas that were embodied within the vision of the Declaration, that all men are created equal and that each man, woman has this inalienable right to pursue their happiness, their life, their liberty, and their pursuit of happiness. And when you talk about conservative, that is really what it's about, is conserving that vision, Susan Harris.
Yes, I would agree. And I think the word happiness is a very deep word. It's not a frivolous happiness. Right. It's a deep, meaningful life. And to pursue a meaningful life doesn't mean the end of suffering. It means including suffering. And because suffering is what leads us to growth and what leads to, quite frankly, more happiness. I know it sounds contradictory, but it really does. And if you try to live your life with no suffering, you will basically not live.
Well, let's go to break. And when we come back, there's happiness that was in the Declaration, and you hit on that. And then there's kind of this idea of, oh, let's all be happy. And I think there's a difference between happiness in that realm and joy.
Well, and I think conservatism is about the meaningful life happiness. And the left is about utopian hedonist happiness.
Aha. On that note, let's go to break. This is Kim Munson. In studio with me is Susan Harris. We'll be right back.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. It's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. Buy your tickets for the three punches to knock down democratic socialism. Go over to Facebook and give us a like. And in studio with me is one of our valued partners, Susan Harris. The Harris family sponsors last year the Federalist Papers with Ben Martin, who is a patriotic historian and former Army Ranger. This year, we're going through the important speeches and documents of America's founding. And Susan, it's so important to conserve those ideas, and that's one of the reasons why we're doing these shows. So thank you for that.
Oh, you bet. It's our pleasure. It's really quite an honor to be able to do it.
It is an honor to get to do that. Steve, you put your ears on. It looks like you want to say something.
You know, we talk about controlling narrative and stuff like that in the show before ours, and it's not the first time I heard the quote. Recently, some Yahoo out there somewhere in media land basically described conservatism as the lowest rung on the ladder. And it's like right there, he sets the stage for everybody who might be somewhat neutral out there or not know what conservatism is about. But as soon as he says it's the lowest rung on the ladder, then it must be something beneath me.
Aha. Uh-huh. But actually, conservatism is about these big ideas, the big ideas of the founding. That all men are created equal.
Well, that's where this culture makes a huge error.
Yeah.
In terms of making that assumption that, well, conservatism can't be anything that affects me.
But see, to that point, Steve, this guy gives a descriptor. He doesn't debate the ideas, and that's what's happened. I was talking with a young millennial the other day, Susan, and she was just concerned that the generation has moved more to, and I think that you hit something maybe in the first segment about people do things because they feel something. This is my opinion. Instead of really kicking the tires on ideas, defending your premise, and if in fact you can't defend that premise, maybe you might want to, you know, take a new look at that instead of how people feel. So you had a comment. We were talking about this during break about millennials.
Yes, well, young people have a tendency to be less conservative, I think. It's just human nature. When we're young, we're learning, we're immature, we're trying to figure out how to live our lives and what works best for us. And we make a lot of mistakes. And one of the mistakes we make is we, at least I think people are making now, is they've decided that, okay, the way to be happy is to change the world. I'm going to change the world. The world is not the way it should be. I'm going to change it. And so they go out and that's their idea. They're going to change the world. And you can say that and you can start doing things and making decisions based on changing the world. But if you don't look in the mirror and change yourself, you will, I think, make a lot of bad choices. If you really want to change the world, and this is what I think young people have gotten away from, you have to start with yourself. You have to grow up. You have to mature. You have to understand what you want in your life and what is going to make your life the very best it can be. How are you going to look at drugs and alcohol? How are you going to look at the way you treat other people? How is that going to affect your life? What vocation are you going to choose? What's your relationship with money going to be? What's your relationship with the opposite sex going to look like? There are so many decisions that you need to make as an individual before you're ready to change the world. And we're kind of getting it backwards. Now we're training young people. You need to go out and change the world before they have a chance to be grounded in themselves. And I think that's one reason millennials are not moving toward conservatism the way that we might have when we were young. I know when I was young, I was a lot less conservative than I am now. And the older I get, it seems, the more conservative I become. And I think that's true of most people. No matter how liberal you think you are, your behaviors and your attitudes and the choices you make are probably a lot more conservative than they were when you were young.
So, Susan, one of the things that you're describing, I think, is introspection. You know, checking oneself, checking oneself's premises. And I don't think that's taught like it used to be. And I think your point is a really interesting one. In order to change the world for the better, there's introspection. So the founding fathers, there was introspection on all these ideas. They went back into history and they looked at all the different societies and what was successful, what wasn't. And they tried to build something that was better. And they did that through introspection of, I think, themselves, but also those old ideas. And we don't talk a lot about introspection much anymore, but you've just described it beautifully.
You know, we don't talk about it and we don't do it. We're too busy on our phones or on our computers or whatever electronic device you are using for the day. We're too busy watching Netflix. You know, if you think about the forefathers, think about how much time they had to think about their lives, about society, about culture. Yes, they had to work, but they didn't come home and turn on the TV and zone out. Mm-hmm. It was quiet. There wasn't electricity. It got dark. They were just there with their own thoughts. And we, as a culture, we don't take that time to really think about our lives anymore.
So how can we conserve or preserve these great ideas if we don't put the work into it? And instead, as Steve just mentioned, have people come in and just give a descriptor that it's just, you know, nothing. If we don't start to understand those ideas, then we won't be able to conserve, preserve them.
I think for most people, it takes a personal crisis for them to start being introspective. And it's unfortunate, but that's where, when I talk about how suffering is really to your advantage, it seems like most people really start to get introspective if they are suffering, because they want to figure out how to get out of that suffering. And when I say that, it means, if you're struggling financially, or if you are struggling with addictions, or if you're struggling with relationships, these are the challenges in your life that force you to become introspective. So in most cases, I think people are not introspective unless it's forced upon them. And what they don't realize is the most beautiful, luxurious thing you can do for yourself is to take care of yourself and to think about yourself in a way that you would care for the person that you love the most. And to take that time to think what it is that you want your life to look like, and to take responsibility for that.
Okay.
That's conservatism.
And so you're talking about the individual. And I think the individual, you know, is very important. You know, we have individual rights, the Bill of Rights, that is embodied in the Constitution. The Constitution was really put in place to address all the usurpations, all the concerns that the founders had with the King of England. I'd recommend people to take a look at it, because there's a lot of that going on right now.
Yes.
But you're talking about the individual, and what the left is doing now, the radical activist left, is instead of people being introspective and looking at themselves as individuals, they're getting people to identify as groups. And then if you identify as a group and in a group, then you can go out and hurt somebody else that's in a different group. And I find that really, really dangerous.
It's absolutely dangerous. And, you know, it's interesting because it's so insidious. It's proposed in a way that makes it seem like everyone wants to be equal. But the only way on the left to be equal is to separate and figure out your identity and what makes you different. Instead of, we're all humans And because we're all humans, we are on the same playing field. We're all the same. So instead of, you know, identifying your difference and figuring out how you're the victim because of that difference, the conservative idea is we're all human beings. And because of that, we're all the same. That's what makes us the same. Our humanity makes us the same. And it doesn't matter what your skin color or any other I have red hair, you know. I could have gone through my life. Believe me, I can't tell you as a kid how many jokes were told about my red hair. You know, I was teased relentlessly being a redhead. And I never took that on as being a victim. It never caused anxiety. It never, you know, crossed my mind that that was something I could take to Congress and get some laws passed for equal opportunity for redheads. And I'm left-handed, oh, by the way.
Oh, boy.
I could really go down that road.
You really could go down that road. So, Susan Harris, this has gone really quickly. We have one minute left.
How did that happen?
Yeah. What would be the final thought you'd want to leave with our listeners today?
You want to change the world? Change yourself for the better. Take a look at yourself. What is it that you want for your life? Make that happen, and the world will be a better place. I promise.
I promise. And you'll be a better person, you know, as well.
And you'll be happy.
And joyful. So, Susan Harris, thank you so much. And be sure and go to my website. I have a feeling that most of the tickets will sell out today for our Three Punches to Knock Down Democratic Socialism. This is our event, which will be next Monday. Over at Water's Edge Winery, Helen Raleigh, who immigrated from China, but she is a fervent U.S. citizen now, loves the American idea. And Dr. Paul Prentice will be our presenters. And so be sure and join us. It's going to be a really important evening. And be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter as well. We have these great op-eds as well as the podcasts that we roll out each Sunday with that. So our quote for today is Russell Kirk. And he says that every right is married to a duty. Every freedom owes a corresponding responsibility. And there cannot be genuine freedom unless there exists also genuine order in the moral realm and in the social realm. So my friends, today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America. Further from my home.